our little demons on this planet, they're really powerful demons who can do amazing things. And it's not that Indra doesn't get hurt. He has to suffer a lot of pain also. For all the heavenly happiness he gets, he also has to face difficulty. And if we think we'll go to the heavenly planets and we get a day off, but we may wind up in some battle against demons. And it may not be very pleasant. Even if we don't get hurt, watching people's heads get cut off is not exactly what you do for entertainment, for a normal person at least. But this is what goes on, even in the heavenly planets. Even in the other yugas, everything is not perfect as we'd like it to be. And even if it was perfect in Satya Yuga or in the heavenly planets, it doesn't last very long. The more we enjoy in the material world, quicker time goes. So in the heavenly planets, or in Brahmaloka, because they're relatively free from distress, therefore time flies for them, literally speaking, so that they're experiencing one of their days like we experience one of our days. Although their day may last 4,300,000,000 years times 1,000, 4,300,000. So 4,300,000,000 years is the day of Brahma. But for him, it's just an ordinary day. It's the day comes, the day goes. I don't know. I haven't been Brahma for a long time, so I can't really tell you exactly what it's like. But we find when Revati, actually it's Revati and her father, Kukuma, went to the heavenly planet, to Brahmaloka, in order to find Revati a proper husband. Lord Brahma said, just wait a minute. The Gandharvas are finishing their concert, and after the concert's done, then I'll speak to you. So the concert ended shortly, and Lord Brahma asked Kukumi and Revati, what would you like? Kukumi, her father and emperor of this world, said, we'd like to find a suitable husband for Revati. He said, no problem. The only problem is that you've been here for only a few minutes of my lifetime, but that's millions of years of yours. So everyone, all your relatives have since died, since you've been here for a few minutes. And all your future generations have disappeared, and even your kingdom doesn't exist anymore. In other words, you are nobody. You came here as an emperor, and you're going back with nothing. But luckily, Lord Balaram has just advented himself, so if you don't stop listening to me anymore and just go back to the earth planet, then you can give your daughter to Balaram, because actually they're eternal consorts. So for what us seems enormous amount of time in the higher planetary systems, It's not even taken into account. It's so insignificant. In any case, here we are on the heavenly planets, and there is a fight going on. And they got to fight. They have to fight. They can't. There's no pacifists. Indra can't say, "Well, I'm tired of fighting. I think I'll retire." No, he has to fight. And he's enormously powerful. So sometimes he wins. But we find out in the previous time, sometimes he loses. Sometimes he winds up in a lotus flower, living there for tens and thousands of years, not eating anything. Could you imagine living in a lotus flower for 100,000 years, and there's no food, and you're hungry? And if you look out, and there's this witch waiting to curse you, because you just killed a Brahmin. Rather unpleasant. Or even the story probably says, Indra became a hog one time. He was cursed by Brihaspati. So it's not all fun and games in the heavenly planets. That's what we have to become convinced of. So that this aspiration, okay, this Krishna consciousness movement is a little difficult. But at least, even if I don't make it, I'm not successful in this lifetime and go back to Godhead, then at least I'll get the consolation prize and I go to the heavenly planets. But Pariksit Maharaj, he prayed that to, when he was cursed to die in 7 days, that he was sitting by the bank of the Ganges asking the sages there, what should I do in this circumstance? So they said so many different things. But Pariksit Maharaj, he only prayed, please give me the benediction that you may go on chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord. And then if I have to take birth again, let me take birth at least amongst devotees. That's all I want. So rather than praying, you know, I always wanted to go to Brahmaloka, and, you know, if you can give me a free pass there, it would be really nice. One-way visit to Brahmaloka. No return ticket. No, all he wanted was to get the opportunity to take birth again amongst devotees. And this is Bhagavatam's there to give us some examples of what we should follow also. So let's read the story. It is a story. Try to imagine it going on like you're watching a movie, because that's more advanced than just trying to get through the Bhagavatam and think, what is the story all about? No, we should actually see the story, and hopefully we'll see it in Krishna consciousness, because this is the Bhagavatam. In other words, understand, as Indra will explain, everything is coming from Krishna. That Bali Maharaj, although he's supposedly a demon, he knows perfectly what the philosophy is. After all, he's one of our Mahajans. Indra is not a Mahajan, but Bali Maharaj is a Mahajan. And therefore, when he preaches to Indra, there's great lessons to learn. So this is text 9. You demigods think your own selves are the cause of your attaining fame and victory. Because of your ignorance, saintly persons feel sorry for you. Therefore, although your words afflict the heart, we do not accept them. Shukadeva Goswami continued, after thus rebuking Indra, king of heaven, with sharp words, Bali Maharaj, who could subdue any other hero, except for Indra, drew back to his ear the arrows known as Narakas, and attacked Indra with these arrows. Then he again chastised Indra with strong words. Since Bali Maharaj's rebukes were truthful, Indra did not at all become sorry, just as an elephant beaten by its driver's rod does not become agitated. When Indra, the defeater of enemies, releases his infallible thunderbolt scepter at Bali Maharaj with a desire to kill him, Bali Maharaj indeed fell to the ground with his airplane, like a mountain with its wings cut off. Purport. In many descriptions of Vedic literature, it is found that mountains also fly in the sky with wings. Not lately, but previously they did. When such mountains are dead, they fall to the ground, where they stay as very large dead bodies. See, that means that the Himalaya mountains at one time perhaps were flying, and then someone killed them. And what we see is the Himalaya mountains or other mountains are dead bodies. When the demon Jambasura saw that his friend Bali had fallen, he appeared before Indra, the enemy, just to serve Bali Maharaj with friendly behavior. The greatly powerful Jambasura, carried by a lion, approached Indra and forcefully struck him on the shoulder with his club. He also struck Indra's elephant. We wouldn't, probably if we just saw Jambasura's club, we'd faint with the speaker being struck by it. Being beaten by Jambasura's club, Indra's elephant was confused and aggrieved. Thus it touched its knees to the ground and fell unconscious. must have been quite a powerful club. Remember, Airavata was born from the ocean of milk. He's not an ordinary elephant. But he goes through a lot of problems being Indra's elephant. Thereafter, Matali, Indra's chariot driver, brought Indra's chariot, which was drawn by 1,000 horses. Indra then left his elephant and got onto the chariot. Appreciating Matali's service, Jambasura, the best of the demons, smiled. Nonetheless, he struck Matali in the battle with a trident of blazing fire. Again, just imagine being on the heavenly planets in this fight and you get hit by a trident made with blazing fire. So it's not all, you get into such an exalted post and it's not all fun and games again. Although the pain was extremely severe, Matali tolerated it with great patience. Indra, however, became extremely angry at Jambasura. He struck Jambasura with his thunderbolt and thus severed his head from his body. When Narada informed Jambasura's friends and relatives that Jambasura had been killed, the three demons named Namuchi, Bala, and Paka arrived on the battle in great haste. It appears that Narada Muni is a troublemaker. He's always trying to stir it up. But not necessarily because he's on the side of the demons. Actually, Narada Muni is just trying to further Krishna's pastimes, or the pastimes, because he's a sage amongst the demigods. He's a pure devotee. Obviously, he's equal both to the demons and to the demigods, but generally speaking, his desire is to further the pastimes of Krishna. Rebuking Indra with harsh, cruel words that were piercing to the heart, these demons showered him with arrows, just as torrents of rain wash a great mountain. Quickly handling the situation, on the battlefield, the demon Bala put all of Indra's 1,000 horses into tribulation by simultaneously piercing them with an equal number of arrows, all with an equal number of arrows. See, even you're one of 1,000 horses just trying to pull Indra, still you get into a lot of trouble. Even the poor animals are in trouble in the heavenly planet. What to speak of the human beings? Paka, another demon, attacked both the chariot with all its paraphernalia and the chariot driver, Matali. Oh, poor Matali is really getting it. By fitting 200 arrows to his bow and releasing them all simultaneously. This was indeed a wonderful act on the battlefield. I mean, how long would it take you to fit 200 arrows to your bow? Then Namuchi, another demon, attacked Indra and injured him with 15 very powerful golden feathered arrows, which roared like a cloud full of water. Other demons covered Indra along with his chariot and chariot driver with incessant showers of arrows, just as a cloud covers the sun in the rainy season. I mean, if we step on a thumbtack, we're crying. What to speak of being on a battlefield and you're being covered with arrows? The demigods, being severely oppressed by their enemies and being unable to see Indra on the battlefield, were very anxious. Having no captain or leader, they began lamenting like traitors in a wrecked vessel in the midst of the ocean. Purport: from this statement, it appears that in the upper planetary system, there is shipping, and that traders there engage in navigation as their occupational duty. Sometimes, as on this planet, these traders are shipwrecked in the middle of the ocean. It appears that even in the upper planetary system, such calamities occasionally take place. The upper planetary system in the creation of the Lord is certainly not vacant or devoid of living entities. From Srimad Bhagavatam we understand that every planet is full of living entities, just as Earth is. There is no reason to accept that on other planetary systems there are no living beings. The Prabhupada is again making the statement that our so-called reality is not reality. That all these planets are all there out of chance. There's no life on them. They're just big balls of fire or dead rocks just floating in the universe. And that only here we have advanced human civilizations, and everywhere else is just void. And anyone who thinks like that will think that this is just another fairy tale. Indra fighting against the demons. It couldn't be. This is too extraordinary. Because we measure everything by our own experience. Like the frog in the well measures everything by his experience. Rather than try to understand that even within our experience, the whole universe is so perfectly arranged with the planets moving their orbits exactly on time, that there must be intelligent control. And if there is intelligent control in the universe, why would anyone create a universe made out of just rocks and put a bunch of people on one planet, so-called civilized people, as the only living entities in the universe, and everything else is just decoration for the people on this planet? It's rather what's called egocentric. First of all, we spend our time giving each other awards, the Nobel Prize for Peace, even though the people we give it to, sometimes they're the ones who start wars all around the world. And yet we're very proud that we have so many degrees, we have so many awards we're giving each other, we're patting each other on our back, saying, you're great, you're the wonderful, you're a supreme. But this is all sides of different signs of different varieties of illusion and bewilderment of false ego. Thereafter, Indra released himself from the cage of the network of arrows, appearing with his chariot flag, horses, and chariot driver, and thus pleasing the sky, the earth, and all directions. He shone effulgently like the sun at the end of night. Indra was bright and beautiful in the vision of everyone. When Indra, who is known as Vrajadhara, the carrier of the thunderbolt, saw his own soldiers so oppressed by the enemies on the battlefield, he became very angry. Thus he took up his thunderbolt to kill the enemies. O King Parikshit, King Indra used his thunderbolt to cut off the heads of both Bala and Paka, in the presence of all their relatives and followers. This way he created a very fearful atmosphere on the battlefield. O King, when Namuji, another demon, saw the killing of both Bala and Paka, he was full of grief and lamentation. Thus he angrily made an attempt to kill Indra. Being angry and roaring like a lion, the demon Namuji took up a steel sphere which was bound with bells and decorated with ornaments of gold. He loudly cried, "Now you are killed." Thus coming before Indra to kill him, Namuji released his weapon. O King, when Indra, the King of Heaven, saw this very powerful sphere falling toward him, toward the ground like a blazing meteor, he immediately cut it to pieces with his arrows. Then, being very angry, he struck Namuchi's shoulder with his thunderbolt to cut off Namuchi's head. Although King Indra hurled his thunderbolt at Namuchi with great force, it could not even pierce his skin. It is very wonderful that the famed thunderbolt that had pierced the body of Vritrasura could not even slightly injure the skin of Namuchi's neck. When Indra saw the thunderbolt return from the enemy, He was very much afraid. He began to wonder whether this had happened because of some miraculous superior power. Indra's thunderbolt is invincible, and therefore when Indra saw that it had returned without doing any injury to Namuchi, he was certainly very much afraid. Indra thought, formerly, when many mountains flying in the sky with wings would fall to the ground and kill people, I cut their wings with the same thunderbolt. Vrishasura was the essence of the austerities undergone by Tvastha. Yet the thunderbolt killed him. Indeed, not only he, but many other stalwart horse heroes whose very skin could not be injured even by all kinds of weapons were killed by the same thunderbolt. But now, although the same thunderbolt has been released against a less important demon, it has been ineffectual. Therefore, although it was as good as a Brahmastra, it has now become useless like an ordinary rod. I shall therefore hold it no longer. Shukadeva Goswami continued, while the morose Indra was lamenting in this way, an ominous, unembodied voice said from the sky, this demon Namuchi is not to be annihilated by anything dry or moist. The voice also said, O Indra, because I have given this demon the benediction that he'll never be killed by any weapon that is dry or moist, you have to think of another way to kill him. After hearing the ominous voice, Indra with great attention began to meditate on how to kill the demon. He then saw that foam would be the means, for it is neither moist nor dry. So meditation means to ask Krishna what to do. So Krishna answered him. This is also Krishna's pastime. Indra is also an instrument for Krishna. Thus Indra, king of heaven, severed Namuchi's head with a weapon of foam, which was neither dry nor moist. Then all the sages satisfied Indra, the exalted personality, by showering flowers and garlands upon him, almost covering him. In this regard, the Shruti mantras say, Apam Painena Namuche Shira Indra Dharati. Indra killed Namuche with watery foam, which is neither moist nor dry. Text 41. Vishvavasu and Puravasu, the two chiefs of the Gandavas, sang in great happiness. The kettle drums of the demigods sounded, and the apsaras danced in jubilation. So we also have cheerleaders in the heavenly planets, people to encourage Indra and others. Vayu, Agni, Varuna, and other demigods began killing the demons who opposed them, just as lions kill deer in the forest. O King, when Lord Brahma saw the imminent total annihilation of the demons, he sent a message with Narada, who went before the demigods to make them stop fighting. The great sage Narada said, all you demigods are protected by the arms of Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and by his grace you have gotten the nectar. By the grace of the Goddess of Fortune, you are glorious in every way. Therefore, please stop this fighting. Shukadeva Goswami said, accepting the words of Narada, the demigods gave up their anger and stopped fighting. Being praised by their followers, they returned to the heavenly planets. Following the order of Narada Muni, whatever demons remained on the battlefield took Bali Maharaj, who was in a precarious condition, to the hill known as Ashtagiri. There on that hill, Shukadacharya brought to life all the dead demoniac soldiers who had not lost their heads, trunks, and limbs. He achieved this by his own mantra known as Sanjeevani. So I'm going to save the last verse for tomorrow. Text 48. Couldn't make these things up. Actually, they should make them into a movie. Be a better movie than it. Imagine, you know, a movie where thunderbolts cutting off people's heads and Indra has a chariot with 10,000 with 1,000 horses and killing someone with a foam weapon. getting out of can of shaving cream, killing an invincible demon with a can of shaving cream. So I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. It's related to the from last chapters. The question is about Mohini Murti principle. How can we use it in preaching? How is it? What are the thresholds?
The Mohini Murti principle. What is
The idea that, for example, we can, if we have Matajis going for preachings, the man will be very.
Well, you have to be. Our aim is not to agitate the Matajis either. I mean, I remember when I was in France that I was asking the devotees there. This is earlier, probably you don't know about it, but in the 80s, France was. Devotees in France were the top book distributors in the world. And I was also distributing books every day at that time. And I was always wondering how in France, because I used to distribute, I speak French, more or less. So I used to speak to French people in the airports where I was distributing. I could never sell them a book, probably because we didn't have French books. And when they saw it was English, they immediately rejected it. I was always wondering, how did they distribute books? So I asked the number one book distributor in the world at that time, how are you distributing so many books in France? So he said, our policy is the men only distribute to the women, and the women only distribute to the men. Unfortunately, none of those book distributors are around anymore. So it may not be the best strategy in the long run. We want our aim is not just to distribute books, and it's actually to help elevate our consciousness, not just to sell books and buy enough bhoga to feed the deities. That's not our aim. It's actually elevation of our personal consciousness and to help others elevate their consciousness too. So we're not only looking to sell a large number of books, we're also looking to sell them in the proper consciousness. Anything else?
Hare Krishna, can you say more about those pastimes in Bhagavatam that we can relish them really like these are realities, and should we also pray to Krishna that something comes in our heart that we just say, oh, so wonderful, and that the mind doesn't say, oh, this is impossible.
Yeah, of course, we should pray to Krishna. That's a good thing to pray to Krishna for. Actually, everyone is praying to Krishna at every moment. We can't not but pray to Krishna, because he's the one who creates everything. Now, Krishna, when people are unconscious of Krishna, who they're praying to, they're still praying to him by their desires. In other words, Krishna senses our desire, just like one can understand the flavor of a flower by smelling it. So everyone is praying to Krishna, and Krishna is awarding everyone according to their desires and what they deserve. So we have some positive desire, like we want to become Krishna conscious. That's very nice to pray to Krishna for that. And Krishna will also reciprocate for the such prayers. As far as understanding the Bhagavatam, if we pay attention to it and try to understand it, then gradually these things will be understood, will be experienced. Just like we can take one of these verses, how Indra was riding in a chariot with 1,000 horses. So if we actually visualize it, and see it in relationship to Krishna, how Krishna is arranging this pastime, because Bhagavatam is all in relationship to different sages, whether it Maitreya Rishi, Vidura, the sages of Namrsharanya. So if we bring it back, to the purpose of the Bhagavatam. And Pariksha Maharaj sitting on the bank of the Ganges hearing this, then, you know, when all these personalities are there and it's put into Krishna conscious perspective, then we'll be in ecstasy hearing these verses. Well, and if we're in ecstasy, that means we're experiencing them. And if you experience something, then you definitely have faith in it. There's no question. Besides that, the underlying premise is that the Krishna is in every page of the Bhagavatam, and when we hear in ecstasy the Bhagavatam, even these stories in relation to Krishna, and we realize Krishna, then we realize the reality of everything. Then there won't be stories, there'll be experiences, transcendental experiences. But that takes some systematic hearing and assimilation and application. And gradually this will be revealed to us as actual, not only just reality, but eternal reality. The Bhagavatam is eternal reality. These pastimes are still going on in the pages of the Bhagavatam. Anything else? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the class. I was a bit sleepy, pardon me for that. But I was thinking, as you said, about the vacation in the heavenly planets that you mentioned. If we actually land up in the heavenly planets, we'll have a very, very long lifespan. And when we come back here, Kali Yuga will be over, no Hare Krishna movement.
You hope it's over.
No. I'm sorry. The Hare Krishna movement will be over and Kali Yuga full force.
Yeah.
So actually, it's a very scary thing to take that detour.
Yes, that's what we're supposed to understand.
Would you say it's better to be a bit of a rascal and take human birth quickly again?
And do what?
I said, would you say it's better not to take that detour, be a bit of a rascal and then come back
well,
here?
Well, we don't have to try to become a bit of a rascal. that comes with our birth.
Okay. All right. Thank
you. We should try our best to make progress in Krishna consciousness, and pray as Pariksha Maharaj pray, that if I have to take birth again, let it be in the family of devotees, mm-hmm. so I can continue on with my Krishna consciousness.
Thank you.
Anything else? No more questions anymore. We've lost our audience online. All right. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.